That's right. Happy Thursday to you. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. You heard Sean live from NRG Stadium. That is John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atula, Figgy Fig, hanging out with you. And it is one of the most important days of training camp. It is joint practice day, baby. They are already out there doing that joint practicing with the Carolina Panthers. Those fine fellas.
They're putting that belt to ass is what they're doing.
It does seem as though that is the case. We'll try and keep up with all of it as best we can, give you some updates. And when all of it wraps up, you will hear again from Seth Payne and give you the lay of the land of what happened with that. So, yeah, we'll do that. I appreciate you guys rocking with us and getting involved with the program as you always do. 713-572-4610 is...
We're getting a bunch of them already.
That is the number.
We'll get to 1040, people.
Right, 1040, where we will get into those opinions that you know you're right about and everybody else is wrong about, including from the 936. The plural of octopus is octopuses, not octopi. I appreciate you coming in with that strong effort. But yeah, man, this is a super important day of practice, and this is probably going to be the most telling day that we've had thus far of football activities on this headed into this 2025 season.
Oh, it will. It absolutely will be. You know, the joint practices, they're better than anything. They're better than preseason games. They may not be, you know, as popular, as entertaining. You can't tailgate. Well, I guess you can, but you don't see a lot of tailgating.
I mean, there was effectively tailgating with, the way that that line wraps around. Yeah. Obviously, we had talked about it for all the open practices prior. It felt like a different beast today.
No, it was. But just in terms of football, what our listeners are largely interested in, this is big. This is big. And I think you're going to get some answers, maybe not, you know, is that your final answer? But you're going to get some answers on a lot of things. Specifically, we're going to be looking at offensive line. And we're already getting some reports. We'll keep you up to date on that. But I think it goes well beyond that. I think there are a lot of places, especially with the injuries, with people sitting out, where you're going to get some real answers. Because the best thing about, and I've said this, so I don't want to be redundant too much, but for those who haven't heard, the best thing to me about joint practices is if there's a rep, if there's a play where the defense maybe just takes something, you know, as the Texans have, an interception or something, you can go back and run it again. The coaches will talk and say, hey, let's do that again. Show me this look. Like, and it's also true ones versus ones. Even in the preseason game, it's everybody, unless they're not participating in practice. Even in preseason games, there are going to be guys that just don't sit out because you don't want some crazy, you know, fall or somebody hitting you, you know, on the blind side, some, you know, undrafted free agent trying to be an All-American, hurting a veteran and all that. There are going to be guys that sit out. So this is true ones versus ones. It's, you know, absolute, as close to full contact as you can get. And you can see the exactly what you want to see on the field. It's not like the down and distance dictates it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you can create the specialized situations that you wish to see outside of hoping that they come up in a preseason game. And then on top of that, as you mentioned, the ones versus ones, it's not just that it's ones versus ones, it's an extended amount of ones versus ones. It is not, hey, we get one series out here with ones just to kind of see operation and then get back to allowing these twos and threes to continue to do their job, jockeying for position on the depth chart, or if they are going to make the depth chart at all. No, we get to do the thing where we fully lay out, hey, let's get these ones, a lot of opportunity, a lot of reps in it with the things that we want to work on, which is cool. You mentioned the offensive line. Clearly, this is the biggest focus. I won't say the singular focus by any means. And again, the offensive line looks similar with no Cam Robinson out there practicing. Mm-hmm. Makes sense as he did not go through walkthroughs yesterday. Left to right, you're used to this. Ariante Ursary on the left. Lakin Tomlinson left guard. Jake Andrews again starting at center. Right guard is Ed Ingram still. And then Titus Howard still kicked out at right tackle. And it seems like they've done pretty well, through the, I believe, first team period and I believe also the second team period, although I'm trying to double check.
Mm-hmm.
Solid pass protection. I didn't see like super glowing terms, but it didn't seem like they were faltering against a Panthers 3-4 front, especially with Derrick Brown in the middle that could be a havoc causer. And I thought this is going to continue over the day, obviously, being a big point of emphasis. But one of the things you absolutely cannot have with this team is pressure on the interior. And Derrick Brown is going to be a good stress test for that. Thus far, it seems like they've handled that well.
Yeah, same line. And it does seem to be solid. Although I did see Jonathan Alexander called the protection on one pass pristine, which is an interesting way to call protection. So they're kind of holding up early. It's still going on as we speak. We're getting all the information. We'll get it to you as well. So the offensive line, back to my first point, it might not be this is your final answer, but do you feel like you have an answer on the offensive line?
An answer, possibly. I think, like, yeah, you have a line that you could probably throw out there and expect decent play from. Mm-hmm. And that's not bad. Like, that is not bad at all, especially where you're coming from with last year, the ways that people have probably rightfully denigrated the way that that offensive mm-hmm. line played up and down last year for a number of reasons, sure. Coaching, you know, all of these, and probably a decent amount of schematics. Like, we can get to all of those things, but is passable is the bare minimum of what we've asked for from this team. And having one iteration of this offensive line that you believe to be passable is a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we still have to figure out what is the permutation that they actually want to throw out there when you have more of these guys healthy. And what's the best iteration? What's the best five that you could throw out there? That's still to be seen. However, it's starting to really feel like you can roll out with the offensive line that we just laid up and maybe be able to actually go out and execute an offense that complements your defense and allows you to go and win football
games. I agree, but the offensive line is, I guess, stealing headlines, for lack of a better way to put it, from other big things. I mean, there are three places today that, and we're going to talk to Seth Payne about it when they come off the field. But the other places where I think you're going to get some real close to answers, at least in terms of, you know, moving into the final weeks of final days of training camp before the preseason really gets going. Running back, safety, and tight end. Running back is going to be something that, you know, we don't know about Joe Mixon. Nick Chubb has been out. You would expect him to come back, but it's time for the opportunities to take for these guys to take advantage of the opportunities. Damien Pierce and Woody Marks, particularly.
Yeah, Damien Pierce not practicing today.
Oh, that's right. He's not out today.
Which that one hurts. I mean, to be fair, we kind of this was could be seen because neither he nor Christian Harris are out there. Both of those suck because this feels like would have been a really cool opportunity to see those guys who could be pivotal in various ways to what you're doing. And obviously, it matters a lot to Damien Pierce, we think, in finding his place and if he has a place continued with this team. But, yeah, man, it seems like Woody Marks, Jawar Jordan have both kind of continued with what they've been doing mm-hmm. in this preseason, this training camp experience for the Texans. As I saw that Jawar Jordan broke a big run mm-hmm. at one point, which, you know, is something that we've seen him do earlier on. So continuing that is a good thing. Woody Marks having nice sustainable runs, again, following in line with what it feels like we've seen. And probably that also speaks again to the offensive line and their ability to go and
yes.
create lanes and, you know, and get some push on the front. But yeah, those guys, it seems like they are continuing what they've done, which I imagine I'm just going to view as just net positive, mm-hmm. right? Like, again, if they're just going to continue what they do, that's probably really good for Jawar, for Woody. The sustainability of that is there, but obviously you would hope that they, like, stand out in a way, which I don't know how much I can say as of right now, but that, I mean, I will take the positive there. I'll take the plus mark.
And then the other one that, the other two, but I want to talk about safety, because safety position right now, listening to Matt Burke yesterday and knowing that, you know, they are shorthanded, you know, obviously with C.J. Gardner-Johnson out. By the way, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is out there right now, walking a little slowly and has a sleeve on his right leg, but he is out there watching the joint practice. And then Jimmy Ward as well.
Is Jalen Reed. Jalen Reed is also out there.
As is Jalen Reed, too. The safety position, I mean, that's crucial right now, and we're going to see, you know, how they perform today.
Yeah, and I'll be completely honest. I'm trying to go back and see if any of the kind of safeties have shown up mm-hmm. in some of the updates we're getting from practice just yet. But, I mean, this is going to be the likes of Stewart and maybe Miles Bryant if he gets some run in there. And, of course, Russ Yeast. Can they show and demonstrate themselves as handling up with what you expect from them and maybe also being prepared for the possibility of being picked on as a potential weak link comparatively with the defense in the secondary, because Derek Stingley is already showing his class as he's been tested and had an interception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so you know that teams are going to, after the season that both cornerbacks put up and with the understanding that Kalen Bullock is a even further developing player, if you're looking for a weak spot and you go, hey, C.J. Gardner-Johnson should be there, except now we have whichever backup, with all due respect to those guys, is out there. Are they capable of handling the test that I imagine is going to come?
Yes, and then also tight end. That's going to be a big one. Apparently, Kate Stover has a good start to the practice so far. We'll keep you updated. But here's where I ultimately wanted to go. And I think this is important. You know, it's one thing for C.J. Stroud, two weeks plus of watching the same defense, kind of knowing what the Texans defense is doing here and there, to sort of gain his, you know, get his feet under him a little bit, handling the offense. He's seen something completely different today. This is a big test for C.J. Stroud. Three-man front, odd-man front, and then also different looks, different, you know, players coming from different places on the field, reading those, making those reads, blocking assignments, etc. C.J. Stroud, right out of the chute, took the team down the field and threw a touchdown pass to Nico Collins. So early returns are good. But this is a big day for C.J. Stroud and the development of him controlling the offense.
Especially because this is not going to be a day where you're looking at install or like mm-hmm. that portion of this. This is a day where it's get out and play football to yes. some degree. Obviously, you're going to be trying to refine whatever you're doing as a team. But I remind me when we have an opportunity to chat with Seth later in the program, I need to ask just how smooth it looks for C.J. Stroud at this juncture, right? Because mm-hmm. we've talked about it historically or in the past last few weeks about how at times it looks, you can see the wheels turning, you can see him kind of processing in a way that wouldn't make sense at this time period as he has a lot on his plate. In an instance where it's, hey, just go out there and play football, how does it look for him at this point? Is there a distinction? Is there a difference when, okay, this is a day that clearly you're putting things in and you're reflecting on it? Mm-hmm. And does it look a little bit more free even as he has that additional responsibility to be, you know, at the helm like a Matt Stafford, like a Tom Brady?
Yeah.
How does it look for him as of right now? I think that that'll be an interesting look versus the Panthers out there today as well.
Yes, and not just, you know, running the offense, but exactly what you said. You know, the comfort level, is it starting to click in? Because he clearly got more comfortable seeing the Texans defense. Well, now he's looking at the Panthers defense. The other part of that is, does it reflect in his passing, in his throws? I'll be curious to see how accurate he is today, if he's the same old C.J. Stroud. It certainly looked like it on the first drive, especially with that last touchdown pass to Nico Collins. But, you know, that translating to his game and the comfort level and the old, you know, it's slowing down thing, that could be huge, especially going, you know, at this point in the preseason.
A couple of personnel notes that are out there that mm-hmm. kind of caught my attention is we're still kind of talking through the early parts of what we're getting out of the joint practice number one on the season this time versus the Carolina Panthers ahead of these teams meeting up noon on Saturday. A lot of 12 personnel I'm seeing, including Jakob Johnson, fullback.
There we go.
Makes sense. Xavier Hutchinson.
Okay. We can talk about this.
Let's do it.
We can talk about
I mentioned this a couple of times, yeah. right?
That, and a couple times off air.
I've seen Hutchinson in there with the ones. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Higgins has gotten some one time, but he seems like they're if not grooming him, or at least seeing how does this work with him alongside the likes of Christian Kirk and Nico Collins in that bunch of, I guess, three or starting kind of wide receivers, so to say.
Yeah. Look, you know, Brevin Jordan going out, obviously nobody wanted it. Nobody saw it coming. It could be one of those things. We talked about it yesterday, how these wideouts, these receivers, tight ends included, can play anywhere on the field. Xavier Johnson has a level of trust because he has done, you know, more than John Metchie and others that are deeper on the depth chart than others. He's a big guy as well. Xavier Hutchinson, and it's not, you know, for goodness sakes, don't think that this is like, oh, Jaden Higgins is, you know, whatever, behind or not, you know, not what we thought he was. No. He's a rookie. Xavier Hutchinson has a lot on him. Xavier Hutchinson might be able to fit into that role just a little smoother and with a little better, you know, confidence from the coaches.
Yeah, so that will then also shape the conversation of the 53-man,
yeah.
specifically that wide receiver room a little bit more. Some more things I'm seeing. I know that, and we didn't mention it, but shout out to Cade Stover. I don't know if we're going to go crazy on pet cat points today or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he had a hell of a wham block mm-hmm. on Derrick Brown, that big defensive tackle in the middle of that 3-4 defense for Ajiro Evero. And that is notable. We know that physicality for him, that tough guy, that Ohio farm boy strength showing up there. But that's the thing that, you know, he has. That's clearly something they want to utilize. I also want to hear how he does in his pass catching
exactly.
opportunities as well.
The blocking is why they drafted him. The blocking is what he did well last year.
This fits in with the profile
exactly.
of a converted linebacker.
Exactly.
Go up and hit somebody. Oh yeah, baby.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. No, this is exactly what you would expect from Cade Stover. I'm with you. expanding his game, becoming more of an every down tight end. That's what we've been hoping for. That's what we've been looking to see. But this part, hey, you still need that. You still need Case Stover to be able to knock those guys on those runs.
How does this affect Mechie if Hutchinson is up there? I imagine this makes it even more difficult because, again, we've talked about it. There's four guys on this wide receiver room that I feel like are untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
The rookies, Nico, Christian Kirk.
Yeah.
And then if Hutchinson is in this place where he is pretty locked in, that is five wide receivers in what is typically six or seven spots for wide receiver. And so you'd start doing that math. Braxton Berrios as a return man has a pretty good shot at these types of things. And then now you're having the conversation. Is it Mechie? Is it maybe Berrios? Is it Watson? Like that's not an easy conversation to have to play musical chairs for maybe one or two spots in that space. A couple more things. It seems like there's been some pressure situations with the offensive line. So obviously early on, offensive line kind of good, but maybe there's still some instances where now games are coming in that they ratchet it up as you continue to go through teams, seeing how that handles, especially for Tay, who it seems like one of the conversations is, can you maintain that same caliber of play as you get fatigued? I don't know if that's a demerit on him or just like, hey, a thing that they're focusing on, point of emphasis. But also worth remembering, Nick Chubb is out there actually practicing. Like, what does the Nick Chubb experience look like? Because we know they went right to Dare in preseason game number one. This is an opportunity to see Nick Chubb. And, you know, how does he hold up? What does he look like? And, I guess, what does the also offensive system look like in a different way? Like, what are they able to get? How does this come across? Because I know we got a small taste of that preseason game one. I imagine it looks a little bit different today as well.
I imagine it will as well. The other thing, and we haven't even, mentioned this, but this Texans defense, everything they did against the offense, and, maybe the offense is really, which they were, behind, et cetera. Well, they're not making life much easier on the Panthers either.
Yeah, and this is probably a sad thing, and the biggest thing probably that you want out of all of this, we talk about all the football stuff, stay upright, because shout out to Sheena Quick, who covers the Panthers. We were able to talk to her at Super Bowl. Nick Scorton, who was a second-round pick out of A&M, was put on the practice or put on the cart. They said it's heat-related, though, but, I mean, still. Like,
it's heat related. There's a lot of heat related.
Yeah, they're definitely going to get a feel for that. Those Panthers coming into town. But that, again, a reminder, hey, when that cart comes out, like, injuries come up in the mind. So just keep everybody healthy out there. Obviously, you don't want too many scuffles, but just keep everybody upright as well. We'll talk to Seth Payne a little bit later on the program, see from his experience what he was able to see through the joint practice that is happening today and happening really as we speak there at the Houston Methodist Training Center. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's talk more about these Astros. Is there something like an unorthodox way of going about these final 41 games that Joe Espada might try? We'll tell you what we mean next. Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Happy Thursday to you. Texans out there on the field with the Carolina Panthers getting some joint practice in, ladies and gentlemen, from the 832. They're like, I have an idea. Have Mechie link back up with his college teammate, catch passes from Bryce Young. Go ahead and figure it out.
Are they both like that?
Are they standing by each other with their mouths covered? doing a LeBron.
The NBA special?
Yeah.
The only thing about that is I look at the Panthers depth chart at wide receiver. It's not bad. Like, obviously, they just drafted Ted Arroyo McMillan. They also still have Xavier Leggett. Adam Thielen is, I think, being
the OG.
Yeah, he's an OG, but I think being decent, like, his role being kind of pared back will help him.
Robert Woods. Mm-hmm.
Plus, you did add Jimmy Horn. They, still have David Moore out there, which, I mean, at that point, I'm starting to stretch the conversation. But, I think they've got a solid offensive wide receiver core.
Yeah.
But I guess if you can get a deal, then get a deal, man. Mm-hmm. I ain't mad at it. Especially because
that's Nick Casario's MO.
You keep seven wide receivers, and we did kind of open up around, don't want to say it like we created the opportunity or the thought of this, but we started thinking about, hey, if they want Tank to come back, he would have to be on that 53-man as well, unless you're like going to try and find eight wide receiver spots on your initial 53 before. That. Like, that feels like a lot.
Yeah, you
so
can't do that.
No. Okay, that conversation at wide receiver gets really interesting. Conversation for the Astros for the time being, a little bit of sigh of relief. And I already can tell, I'm going to give myself loads of anxiety. I'm going to raise my blood pressure in a way that I don't need to. Remember, I got three TVs. Every night, you can guarantee that if there is a Astros game or a Mariners game or both, those games will be on those TVs.
Yeah.
And I'm not, it's not,
it's
I'm not,
not
well.
Early anymore.
I'm not well because I had the Astros game on, I had the Mariners game on. Thankfully, both of them went the ways mm-hmm. that you would want to. Orioles win in a walk-off fashion. The Astros get a 4-1 victory on a Hunter Brown night, which wasn't the easiest thing in the world.
No, it was an interesting Hunter Brown night, wasn't it? He seemed to get rattled a couple times with his own control, and then the umpiring and the balk and all that stuff. You know, he's like pointing, hey, man, get in the box. Sorry, balk. I'm like, wait, what?
What is happening?
Alex Cora got ejected, and he just seemed to be rattled a little bit, but composed himself and went into the seventh inning, didn't he?
Was he it? Did. Yeah. 6 2/3 for him. He just couldn't get that final out. Mm-hmm. I think a couple of base runners ended up on the paths, and Joe Espada saw 93 pitches and was like, I think we can go ahead and turn this over to the pen. You've done admirably on the night. But I think the bullpen usage ends up being even more interesting, not just because of what's happening, you know, mm-hmm. there, right? And with the starting pitching and getting that together, but, you know, Josh Hader on the 15-day IL, and it's very clear that it's not going to be 15 days.
Oh, they said it yesterday, which is about as candid as the Astros will get. And it's also interesting because he said, how did he put it? This is going to take a little longer than 2 weeks. Well, there's 6 weeks left in the season.
Not only that, I'm surprised that you mentioned a little longer than 2 weeks as opposed to Josh Hader is getting a second opinion.
Oh, yeah, that's too.
That's your favorite. That is the John Lopez special. What that mean when you get a second opinion,
that
Lopez?
That means you didn't like the first one. Like, if Figgy has a shoulder issue and I say, well, go get an opinion. And he says, hey, he says it's good. Are you going to get a second one?
I want to see if it's good.
I want to make sure it's good.
You might. If you're looking at a car, you like the car, you might get a second opinion on another car.
Not your shoulder. You're like, okay, cool. I ain't going to the doctor again. So, yeah, second opinion, which is never good. And then, you know, Espada says this is going to take a little longer than 2 weeks. That's what got me thinking.
Okay. It's always a problem when you start thinking, ain't it?
It really is. It's the story of
especially
my life.
Especially if you start thinking too much.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, well, that never happens except every day. And this is what got me thinking. So remember, they've always named a closer for obvious reasons because they've had an obvious one. But even when Presley was here and Josh Hader came in, what did Joe Espada say? Very directly, in training camp, Josh Hader is going to take the ninth inning. And that's with a closer that won World Series, you know, in uniform.
Yeah.
He's been very direct about the closer.
And, it makes sense. It's deeply comforting for players and, you know, for pitchers to know their role, to be able to build their routine, to know, you know, mentally, because it's such a mental game, being baseball in general, but also being a pitcher that you know, the essence of baseball being that battle between your pitcher and your batter and being able to contextualize that properly well before, hours before the game, knowing what's going to happen matters.
You are 100% right. But you know what he said when Josh Hader went out right after talking about a little more than 2 weeks? He said, I'm not going to say who has the ninth inning. I'm paraphrasing, but he did say this. I'm not going to say who has the ninth inning or who has the eighth inning. And that got me thinking. We just assume it's Brian Abreu. I think it should be Brian Abreu by and large. It probably will be Brian Abreu for the most part. But I don't think it's going to be Brian Abreu closing out games all the time. He's very adamant about this is our closer. And they've done this in the past, not with Espada as the manager, where they didn't necessarily have like a, you know, true to form, you know, identified closer. They've mixed and matched at the back end. And to me, that's what's going to be the most interesting thing about these last 41 games. How much is Abreu going to close? Is Bennett Sousa going to close some? Which, by the way, his slider last night.
I knew you were going to bring up the slider.
Baby, that was a professional slider.
Okay, thank you.
That was a professional slider. He had guys just flailing at air, man. So I think, I'm not so sure I hate that idea. Because here's a manager that has been able to be like a chameleon in terms of his roster.
This year in particular?
Yes. How they turn runs, how they try to score runs. Small ball versus getting the right guy with the big bat in there, and et cetera. If he's a chameleon manager, he might just and boy, this would lock up manager of the year if he pulls it off. He might just mix and match at the back depending on you know who's feeling the best, you know, batter versus pitcher matchups. Bennett Sousa has more than proved himself. I think you know he could close out some games. Maybe someone else could close out some games. I could see Joe Espada sort of changing things around at the back end. I really could.
Okay. Yeah. That would be, I don't hate the idea just generally, right? Like I understand, especially for different circumstances, like you, I don't know that Brian Abreu is your all circumstances, all right, just put him in the ninth. The tough thing about that, though, is considering that your bullpen is thinner than it was prior, mm-hmm. when you start kind of doing and mixing and matching, and not just for usage, right? Like, all right, this guy's thrown enough pitches over the last few days where he's off tonight, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're actually just, okay, this circumstance calls a little bit better for this pitcher, I think it makes it even more difficult to manage, you know, your pitcher selection. Who are you going to throw out there at various points in the sixth or the seventh, mm-hmm. right? Because someone like Bennett Sousa, when you know that you have Abreu, like you can kind of schedule that out. You can see that out. But if you're like looking at the day, and maybe this is coming into the day, you mm-hmm. have that understanding of, okay, every day we have to reorder, you know, the priorities of which we would use these yeah. pitchers. But that, I think the more and more that you deviate, or the more and more that you change things up, the more opportunities you have to have a little bit of a misstep. And it feels like in a race that is so tight, or feels like it will be so tight with the Mariners, that opens up the opportunity of a wrong step, which maybe that's unfair for me to even bring that up, considering how well Joe Espada has handled yeah. the multitude of instances where he had to be unorthodox, mm-hmm. forced into these various places. It's just a little uncomfortable for me.
I think it's more than fair, and I, like a lot of people, just assumed Brian Abreu throws a lot. He throws damn near every day, so he would fit the profile of just stepping into the closer's role. He has the stuff, you know, of a closer. He showed it last night, got the save, et cetera. But it also fits Joe Espada's profile to say, not so fast. And I'll go back to this. He's a guy that has normally very much defined the role. Didn't do it this yeah. time, you know. And so I'm wondering if the wheels are turning. They're going to lean more into some of maybe the analytics, the matchups, et cetera. But not just that. Keep in mind, after today, they have 10 games in 10 days. So he's going to have to maybe manipulate some of these guys. And then the final thing that got me wondering about this.
Okay.
You might be getting some more arms in the bullpen as you get starters back.
Sure.
You know, so I could see where.
And we're probably not too far from the likes of France.
Luis Garcia
and Garcia
last night, yeah.
bringing themselves back up to the major leagues as well.
It's a roll of the dice, but it would definitely lock up, if he hasn't already, manager of the year, if he can pull it off.
Yeah. I feel like he's got to be, there's kind of a meme that flies around of yeah. like, just, you know, I'm tired of you speaking to a deity. Just like, I'm tired of you. I don't want to be your strongest soldier or something to that effect. No. Right. Like, it feels like Joe Espada has been the baseball deity's strongest soldier of yeah. we're just going to throw all of our toughest challenges at you. And he's handled them admirably. This is another one clearly that pops up. But the first iteration of it handled pretty well by the manager of the Astros in a 4-1 victory. Shout out to Bennett Sousa with the snap of his slider. And then, of course, Brian Abreu finishing this one out. And, of course, off day today before they get back in action on Friday. I will still be watching baseball in the middle of this show, mind you, because there's a getaway game for the Mariners in Baltimore to see whether they are down even like more than one game, or whether they can bring this back to a half game lead only for your Astros. So we'll keep you up to date with that as we go as well. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. The day continues to roll on. We'll check back in on what's happening out there at the Houston Methodist Training Center with the joint practice between your Texans and the Carolina Panthers. But coming up next, let's get into our question of the day. What is your "I'm right and everybody else is wrong" about opinion? 713-572-4610, because my partner here, I'm pretty sure he's made exclusive of you of them. We'll talk about it next. Yep, in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. We're looking all over social media and checking for updates from Texans, Panthers, joint practice that's happening at the Houston Methodist Training Center. And what was the thing that you saw, Lopez, or the kind of realization that you seem to have?
Jalen Noel?
No, just in general about practice. You were like, hey,
they're getting after it. Yeah. You know, by and large, when they first started having these joint practices, they would kind of be on two different fields doing their own thing, their little drills, maybe even some 7-on-7. Nah, man, they warmed up. Let's go. They went at it. They're still going at it. 11-on-11 ones, and then twos, and then mixing in some others, and back to ones. This is why I love these more than preseason games.
Yeah, so I've seen a Mechie touchdown happen mm-hmm. with the twos. So Mechie continues his hot play when it comes to training camp. Thankfully, saw a little bit of red zone for the Texans offense where 7-12 happened.
Mm-hmm.
Nico catching a touchdown pass. That's one of the things that you like to see. I've seen that there's kind of been an up and down nature for the offense today, seemingly. Mm-hmm. There's good, there's bad, there's in the middle happening all over out there. So, I mean, that seems to track with everything that we've kind of gotten a feel for. And at one point, it seemed like, supposedly, according to someone in the stands there, that CJ was getting a little frustrated that they were not able to run the ball a little bit. So, yeah, man, there's all sorts of things, clearly room for improvement. But we're still catching a lot of stuff that's happening out there at camp. But let's get to our question of the day now. What is a I'm right and everybody is wrong opinion that you hold? 713-572-4610. This comes up because of one of my partner here's many of those types of opinions that came to the fore again today, courtesy of Payne and Pendergast.
Mostly Seth. Seth came at me a little bit because I guess the question came up, Alex Cora got ejected.
That's right, for not adequately knowing what a balk is.
Yeah, and or the interpretation of that rule, when whatever.
I said what I said.
Well, I get whatever. it's about going from the stretch to the windup, vice versa, et cetera. Anyway, and he was adamant about being right. He was wrong, but he was adamant about being right on that. So the question, so Seth decided to give me, throw me to the ground and step on me and wipe his feet.
I mean, he's not wrong, though. When Sean asked Seth, who of the Sports Radio 610 personalities would be the most likely to end up in the spot similar to Alex Cora, where you're just fighting on this mm-hmm. and ultimately get yourself ejected behind it, it is John Lopez. It is John P. Lopez, as evidenced, I saw this yesterday, and I intentionally did not get into it, where John and Figgy in group chat, and you guys heard the conversation, and I honestly, I'm afraid to bring it back up again that you guys will jump back into the conversation about whether who was bigger, Michael Jackson or Taylor Swift. This conversation, my phone was lighting up all evening long with the back and forth, and I was like, guys.
Here's the thing, and you guys know this, some others that I get into it with don't. I have fun doing that. Like, to me, that's fun. And by the way, the difference between me and Alex Cora is I would be right.
See?
If I was standing on that rule, I would be right. But and we all have those moments like, I know I'm right and everyone else is wrong.
Uh-huh. So what are those for you? 713-572-4610. I appreciate the text that have already came in.
I mean,
that's crazy.
The obvious one is the Taylor Swift and Michael Jackson thing. I am right.
Don't do that.
Saw the text.
I'm putting the kibosh on that. We're not doing that.
Where was I wrong?
We're not doing that.
On any of the points
I refuse to do that. I'm not allowing that.
You was wrong on the first point of it.
Hey!
You should read your time. Anyway, irregardless is not a word. Irregardless is not.
That is in the dictionary, right?
Okay, and I tweeted about this just specifically at you guys and Seth and Sean. Any linguist will tell you, Merriam-Webster will tell you, dictionaries do not define language, they reflect it. Do you honestly think, like at some point, the brain trust at Merriam-Webster decided, you know what, we forgot that irregardless is a word, let's put it in this here. No, they know what the words are, they didn't just forget, it in because it reflects that people are misusing this word as a real word, so we might as well put it in because they're misusing it.
But do you feel like it's possible to create new words going forward, or are we just sticking with the same words from the beginning of time?
No, new words have been created as a result of like the world and the culture changing.
Irregardless.
No, not like irregardless. That they just put that in to reflect that people are misusing it. Like a good word like GIF. You know, like GIF. Because the world has changed and this is a new thing. That is a new word. It's not being misused and they put it in. It's a new word. Irregardless is being misused, so they put it in.
There's a number of words that you will also acknowledge are words that the generation of them was what you would deem misuse. I think the issue here for you, Lopez, is that you view the authority on whether or not things are words as the official the official gatekeepers. And the fact of the matter is words exist because we use them. And if there's communication and we have a expression of our meaning, then that is a word. That's how this thing happens, brother. Like, that's just so irregardless is a word because that's how people use it. People
I think Lopez just stuck on regardless as the
because
as the
regardless
word.
Is the word.
But now you got irregardless.
No,
in
irregardless has been they've been misusing it so many times. Like ain't. Ain't is not a word. It's in the dictionary because it's been misused so much.
My man is Don Quixote right now, fighting the mission of civilized.
I feel like I'm in first grade arguing with the teacher.
It's not going to happen. It's not going
to
happen. Yeah,
you're not allowed to use ain't. Ain't is not a word.
Well, regardless, see what word I use there? Regardless, I'm right and anybody who thinks otherwise is wrong.
That's right. All right. So
about you guys?
You very much get the game here from on the text line. Now people are just getting into words that they think are words and not words. That's not exactly where I wanted this to go. But I do appreciate the people that have come in on the text line. I mentioned from the earlier from the 936, the plural of octopus is octopuses and not octopi.
I don't know about that.
I appreciate that. But I do love this one from the 832 because I very much believe it. I don't know if it's unpopular, actually, now that I think about it. The Rockets would have won those championships regardless of whether or not Jordan retired. They said nobody can win eight straight.
That's a good one.
I won't say necessarily nobody can, but the reason why Michael Jordan retired at that point was fatigue. Mm-hmm. Like we can get into the conspiracies about gambling debts or what have you.
Why was he fatigued?
I'm not going to take that away from y'all. Y'all can have that because obviously it's not going to be easy to extract that from people's feelings. But he was fatigued. Like there was a wearing down within that. I don't believe that they would have beaten that Rockets team that operated like a team of destiny of sorts.
Yeah.
I mean, and we also forget, and I know it's not the same thing, but Jordan came back. What was that, 95?
Yeah, at the end of that season, a little gray area. No,
but I'm saying, the point being, like, you see what happens with, and it's not like Michael Jordan wasn't playing basketball. Now he wasn't playing professional basketball in that same way.
Yeah.
But it's not like you did not see a team that had some sort of like that worn down Michael Jordan in that time period and see what that would have done.
Right.
Clearly, it was a different team. And I think that the Rockets team would have still handled
business. The bigger point being, that's a good one where I'm right and you are all wrong. What about you guys?
The one that comes to my mind, this is sports related. I feel like the Astros still would have won without the cheating stuff. If they didn't go through with the cheating scandal and all that stuff, maybe they would have lost a little more games, but I think they still could have won the World Series.
That's a good one. The Dodgers say otherwise, and you can tell them they're wrong, that they're all wrong.
Yeah.
What about you?
The Rockets one is a big one for me. Like, I stand on that one. Somebody said Rockets would have won if Chris Paul had a healthy hamstring. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that one feels pretty clear as well, that one would have been the way that it went. Mm-hmm. Like, do you view that one to be as unpopular?
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any others, like, in terms of just, like,
I'm certain that there are other ones, but of course,
I think it is what it is. It's the perfect way to sum up something. Like, and look, I'm not even just poking at you, Lopez, but sometimes you know what it is, and ain't no point of going down that road. So it is what it is right there.
Well, another way to say it is what it is anywho, because it doesn't mean anything. But that's regardless. See what I did it again.
You just keep bringing it back to this. Like, we're just going to have pedantic conversations here.
What about the one that I got into it and Seth referenced it for damn near an entire segment with Nick Wright back in the day?
Biopic?
Biopic is what he calls it. And biopic is more than acceptable. And he refused to accept that point. You can say biopic.
Okay, so you was on board with biopic. You were saying biopic, and they were saying biopic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm very much on the idea that biopic is the right word.
Oh, no, I had it the other way. Yeah, I was saying biopic.
Okay.
I was like, you're switching sides here, aren't you,
I was saying biopic, yeah.
You're switching sides here.
And he was saying biopic. I just had that backwards.
Somebody said Oilers would have beaten the Bills if there was no second half. Well, yeah, I think that's a great point as well.
That's easy to stand on because, you know, they went to halftime with a 30-point.
I think that is probably the easiest one, yes, to get to that space. Mm-hmm. I think, let me see. I'm trying to probe the depths of my sports ones because I feel like we've had enough of the pedantic nature of some of these conversations.
Yeah, yeah. Although I do like Ocho's.
What did Ocho come with?
He goes, for all intensive purposes is correct because it rolls off the tongue better.
832, Shipley Donuts is better than Krispy Kreme. Yes, I said it. I think that's a good one. Texas would have won a Super Bowl if Matt Schaub wouldn't have gotten hurt on the sneak.
Oh, I like that one.
Now we're getting to the place.
Yes.
Man. I think that there's a take. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I agree with that one, but there is absolutely a take.
I kind of do.
All right, lay out your case here.
Well, I mean, they were, what, 7-1 in Tampa? They ran a quarterback sneak for Lord knows what reason. What did he break? His foot? I think it was his foot. And then everything. I mean, they were just killing people. Just killing them. 7-1 or 8-1, something like that, when he hurt his foot. And they were just, the defense was obviously outstanding. They still came back and damn near got to the AFC championship, or was it divisional? Anyway, they won a playoff game. I'm with you on that one.
All right. Yeah. I'm interested in how you feel about this one, because I've had long knockdown, drag out conversations about it. Kyle Shanahan, who seems to be, you know, huge and loom large when it comes to offense in the NFL in this modern era. From the 832, Kyle Shanahan is not the great coach everyone thinks he is when you consider the number of, you know, poor high picks and, you know, choking in the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. How do you view that? Because I am hard-pressed to get there.
I am too, to be honest. You're saying that he's not?
That's what the texter says, that he's not that great of a coach. The tough part about it is I understand those are some of the metrics that we look at, mm-hmm. coaching behind. Like, are you able to get to these places where you're able to get the, you know, results? Like, it's a results oriented right. business, even though process, I think, is how you get there in theory. And on top of that, there is something to be said for he is the top of that organization. Mm-hmm. I think that was it John Lynch there, mm-hmm. as the general manager, kind of serves at his behest with all due respect to him. And they have made a number of, you know, kind of ill-advised picks, including, and probably like the biggest one, is giving up ample capital in order to go get Trey Lance, and ultimately he does not work out at all. But at the same time, I still look at the ways in which he continues to make a little something out of nothing in some degrees, which of course is his fault to some place, mm-hmm. To some place when it comes to personnel. But he's still very good at calling plays and drawing up offense and having pretty sustained success, just not at the super, super highest level.
I'll tell you another sports one that I know I'm right on. If you put any list of the top three, top five NBA players of all time, and you don't include Wilt Chamberlain, you're wrong. You're wrong.
Who's your top five now?
I would say probably, depending on what side of the argument you want to take, you know,
LeBron, Taylor Swift,
LeBron and MJ, then whew. Who else would be up there? I put Wilt top three, top five. I personally would put Wilt three. And he played against a bunch of 5'8" white guys. No, he did not. That argument frustrates me.
He played
me
against the plumbers, man. Dude, and mailmen.
There you go. You're one of them. You go back and look at the players he played against. Why am I going on this tangent? You know,
do it.
Anyway, I'm right.
Do it. Commit.
All right. Hall of Famers.
Did he really have a 100-point game?
Oh, absolutely.
Where's the proof at? I feel like we got proof of everything but that damn game.
I've told you that story about the manager on that Sixers team. Ended up being a friend of mine years later. He was the ball boy manager, whatever you want to call. He was at the game. In
Hershey, Pennsylvania?
In Hershey, yeah.
Yeah, let's take his word for it.
There's some players that have played in it that were interviewed about the game. And what's funny, I think it might have been Pablo Torre who did a podcast episode on it. The thing that they actually contest is not whether he actually did it, but whether or not some of the ways in which the game was called were as up and up as they would like. So, I mean, there's conspiracies if you want to get there outside of just it didn't happen. But yes, it's definitely, and that's part of why we did not have film of it, is that it happened. It was like not an exhibition, but it happened in a non-standard place. Of they didn't play in Philadelphia; they played in Hershey.
Yeah, they had. They used to do that kind of barnstorming.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Back when the NBA wasn't as established as it's become a little bit more now. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL. We'll check back in on what's happening out there at joint practice, but then also the NFL. Being handed multiple losses now this week when it comes to legal matters. We'll talk about that more next.